contacts, a lot of you on the listserv, to put out reminders about upcoming trainings. Today, our phone-based training is going to be about mold and the role of the town health officer in inspecting and looking for mold. If I could ask everyone, just as a preliminary task, to mute their phones so we don't hear paper shuffling and background noises. We are going to be recording this call and all the questions that follow so that we can post a podcast on the website with the slides. If folks, I'd heard that folks were having some trouble downloading the slides. I'm wondering if perhaps it's because it's a PDF. If people want to email me directly, you can see my email on the listserv, then I can send the PowerPoint document to people instead, if that's something that people are able to open instead of a PDF file. And so without any further ado, I'd like to introduce Chris Seidema. He's our industrial hygienist here at the Environmental Health Division, and he works primarily with the Envision School Health Program and the Radon Program, but he has also become a resident expert on mold. So the presentation will take approximately 15 minutes, and then we'll have some time for questions at the end. So folks can hold questions till the end. That would help us. All right, go ahead, Chris.
Thank you, Lillian. And before we get started, I'd just like to say thank you to you all, because you serve a very important role for us here in Vermont, and there's a lot that we wouldn't be able to do without you, especially because we don't have the resources to get out into people's residences and things. So thank you. Thank you very much. And so to start, at first I'd like to just show where in the Town Health Officer Manual the mold and moisture issues are applicable. And it's in Chapter 5, Subchapter 16 under the Rental Housing Health Code, and it's Section 8 under Structural Elements. And I won't read that paragraph right there for you, but I'd like to draw your attention to the statement at the end that says, shall be free from the regular or periodic appearance of standing water or excessive moisture, which may result in visible mold growth. So really, your authority lies within the water and moisture part, and mold is just kind of a symptom of excess water and moisture. So keep that in mind as we go through the rest of this presentation, that your authority really lies in that moisture and water, and the mold is evidence of that. But I'd like to give you some information so that you're armed with the knowledge that you need when you go in to do an inspection about mold, even though water is your primary concern. So for your records here, I have the applicable rental housing health code down here, which are places that you'll more are the likely places that if you're going to find mold, these are where they're going to be. In A4, bathrooms must be ventilated to external by air or window. Commonly, there's no bathroom vent, and if there is a bathroom vent, maybe it just vents into the attic, which can definitely cause problems. And then under 8A, a home must be weathertight and watertight, and basically that just is a reference to water and moisture intrusion from the external of the house. And then finally, the home and unit must be free of standing water and excessive moisture. And again, mold can be an indicator of that excessive moisture. So let's take a look at what mold and mildew actually are. And mold and mildew are general terms used to describe a whole family of organisms called fungus. There are many different types of fungus, and they serve a very important role in nature by breaking down organic material. Without it, we'd kind of be swimming in our own garbage. So mold can vary in color and appearance, which is an important point to make, and as you'll see in a moment when I talk about something that I'm sure you all have heard before, our toxic black mold. So mold is everywhere, and all it needs to grow is organic matter, which I like to call food. These things can be furnishings, linens, clothing, things like that. And in the building, we commonly see them as building materials, soft, porous building materials such as carpet, wallboard, or wood. Mold also needs water or moisture, which can be from flood water, plumbing or roof leaks, and simply just the relative humidity that's contained in the air. As a town health officer, people contact you because of health concerns. So I just want to explain a little bit about the health effects of mold that we commonly see and are to be expected. So I first wanted to draw your attention to fungal infections. They are rare but possible. And I just bring this up because I've taken the mold calls here at the health department for a while now, and for the first time I've gotten a call about an individual who actually had a fungal infection where the mold was growing within her nasal cavity and sinus. And what I did and what you should do for things like this is direct the individual to their healthcare provider, their physician, and they're going to provide the best information for that person. But commonly we see, the most common things we see for environmental exposure to mold are upper respiratory irritation, such as the eye, nose, and throat, and allergic symptoms such as runny nose, congestion, and sneezing, and exacerbation of pre-existing conditions such as asthma, which is constriction of the airways. And so as I mentioned before, we commonly hear about this terrible culprit, the toxic black mold. And I'd just like to give you a little information so you're armed professionally and for your own knowledge, and so that you can be conversant with people in this. And really, toxic black mold doesn't really mean anything, because many molds can be black, and a so-called black mold can be present in other colors. They can be many different colors, depending on the environmental conditions or what it's feeding on, or different things like that. But typically, when people say toxic black mold, they're usually referring to Stachybotrys charcharum. And this is a very high-profile mold, because there's historically has been a lot of high-profile litigation and public attention. Some celebrity, I don't want to call it an endorsement, but celebrity testimonials about health effects of this mold in particular. And also, it's important for you to know that the toxicity of these molds in a residential setting is quite controversial, and we don't have clear exposure and health effects data in the public health literature. So when you go into a residence to do an inspection, there are several questions that are applicable on the town health officer inspection form. Those being question 6.4, are the bathrooms ventilated? Question 6.5, are clothing dryers ventilated to the outdoors? 8.1, is the building weathertight and watertight? And 8.3, is the house free of standing water, visual evidence of water intrusion, or a musty smell? And question 8.4, is the building free of visible mold or mildew? So if you go into a residence to determine if there's a mold problem, I'd like to give you a primary strategy for trying to identify if a building is plagued with water or moisture intrusion. And that primary strategy is a building investigation and not air sampling or air testing. For this primary building investigation, you should be using your eyes and nose to identify a mold problem. So if you see it or if you smell mold, there's no need for air testing because you know you have it. A place to track down the mold is to find the source of water or moisture. So use your eyes for signs of water or moisture damage. Use your sense of touch to feel for wet surfaces. And a moisture meter can commonly be helpful, but it is certainly not required. And I have a picture of one on the side there, and you can see there's two little pins that penetrate the wood, and it gives a relative content of water in a material. So evidence of water or moisture damage in the absence of visible mold is actionable, as I went over in the rental housing health code. Again, mold does not need to be there. Water damage is the primary issue of concern. And so what I commonly recommend people do is, if they are convinced that they have a problem, is to perform increasingly invasive building investigations. And by that I mean, if you don't see it just by walking through the house, maybe pull up some carpet, or pull back some molding, or drill a test hole in a wall to see if there's mold growing in a wall cavity. But certainly this is not your task, and if a increasingly invasive building investigation was to be conducted, certainly it should be an agent of the landlord that performs such a task. So I just wanted to give you a couple places to look for mold, and there's a list here. These are the places in a house where water is present or easily intrudes, or there are appliances that create water and condensation that mold can grow on, such as basement, attics, areas that have been flooded, bathrooms, kitchens, closets. Furniture is a good one, mattresses, windows and windowsills. They're commonly either not well sealed to the exterior of the building or the building envelope, or just as a simple result of the cold window on a warm, moist interior of the house can create enough condensation for mold to grow on the dust that's in the air. Carpeting, food storage areas, the space between the furniture and the outside walls is also a really good place for mold to grow. That stagnant air gets trapped in between a couch and an exterior wall that might not be insulated as well as it should be, and mold will grow. And then certainly around appliances like refrigerators, air conditioners, and dehumidifiers. Either just naturally or because of their age, they're not well insulated, or because of they're not drained properly. And on the right there, my picture is just a picture of a drywall surface, and it was wallpapered with a vinyl wallpaper, which maybe someone thought looked attractive at the time, but certainly for mold growth, it was good for that too. And so I'd just like to reiterate again that air testing should not be your first step or your first recommendation to a landlord or to a tenant. And it's because if mold is visible, air testing is unnecessary. Sampling and testing for mold includes air sampling, taking an air sample, culturing the mold that was taken in the air sample, and identifying the mold that was first collected, then cultured. And so all of these steps are very complex. The results typically show the presence of mold. Mold is everywhere, indoors and outdoors. So a result, when a mold test is done, the results are almost always positive, if you will. Interpretation of these air results are difficult because there are no health standards or laws. So in a lot of environmental exposures, for example with chemicals, if you were to take an air sample and you get a number of micrograms of a chemical per liter of air, we have health standards, laws, and regulations that say above that number is unsafe or could produce health effects, and below that number, we don't see health effects. So below that special number is within the law. And for mold, we don't have that. Finally, scientific testing is often expensive, especially if an independent consultant is hired to come in to take the samples, and rarely does the mold test reveal a clear answer to those seeking clarity on their mold situation. So certainly you are also not expected to fix mold problems, but to give you an idea, for example, maybe for a follow-up inspection, if you were to find a problem, of things that need to be addressed for a mold problem to be fixed correctly. Water, so you have to fix the water and the moisture problem. If that's not fixed, the mold is just going to regrow. So that might include plumbing, roof, windows, drainage, insulation on exterior walls. Any number of things can introduce moisture onto the interior of a building. The relative humidity of the building must be managed. And by managed, we mean between 30 and 60%, and ideally around 50%. But in bathrooms and things like that, especially where hot showers are taken, this relative humidity target is very hard to achieve, especially at the time of showers, which is why, again, a ventilation fan in the bathroom is so important. Damaged building items, porous building items that cannot be cleaned, must be removed. We commonly tell people if a building material was not removed within 48 hours of being wetted, that we assume it's damaged and it needs to be get rid of. And then finally, cleaning hard building materials with soap and water or scrubbing, sanding. You'll hear lots of different strategies. I've heard of some contractors using soda blasting or dry ice. There are many different things contractors will try to do to get rid of it. But again, hard building materials need to be cleaned. And so just to explain a little bit further about removing soft building materials that have been damaged by mold. As I said, if the materials were not dried within 48 hours of becoming wetted, they should be considered damaged. And these things include ceiling tiles, mattresses, furniture, and carpeting. Also, things like stuffed animals that might not be worth it to be washed, they should be discarded as well. But things that can be laundered can, and if the person still wants them, they should be laundered. And these things include linens or clothes. If they can be washed in a washing machine, they can be held onto still. And the picture on the right there is a house that was actually in Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans. But what I thought was really interesting is you don't see any water line on this house. So this house, all the mold that you see growing in this house was just because of rain and moisture intrusion. And this house in particular was left unoccupied while the city was evacuated. And you can see what several weeks of water intrusion and moisture during the storm has caused while the occupants of this building wasn't there and the room remained stagnant and had limited ventilation. And things like this are applicable in Vermont. During Tropical Storm Irene, we certainly had heavy rainfall, people that were cut off from second homes, which would leave them unoccupied and unventilated and stagnant air in them. So these are all things that can happen. And so cleaning hard building materials and items, including tile, bathtubs, which could be fiberglass or iron with ceramic coatings, that sort of thing. These hard and non-porous materials just can be washed, unless they are structurally damaged, of course. And leaks over time, plumbing leaks over time, roof leaks over time, that drip on wood, for example, can degrade the material structurally and certainly should be replaced by a competent contractor. And for cleaning hard building materials, there's different opinions on the best practices. Even within our federal agencies, there's a difference of opinion. And for example, here I have the EPA recommends soap and water and scrubbing, and the CDC recommends bleach and water and scrubbing. And here at the Vermont Department of Health, we have recommended to people to use soap and water and scrub. Bleach is probably unnecessary. But I just wanted to draw your attention to this difference of opinion among our agencies, and there's no exact, clear, right answer. But you will see different opinions on that, and I wanted to let you know. Commonly, you also see biocides or mold or fungus inhibitors, and I think these are probably more common with your contractors and your cleanup crews, as opposed to just your average resident trying to clean up, but we haven't really recommended those in the past. I think that if a mold project is going to be undertaken for cleanup, personal protection, you guys should also know about some personal protection recommendations provided by the EPA. And mold growth problems are usually described in an area of square footage that's affected and the density of colonization. And for small cleanups, less than 10 feet, which non-professionals may attempt, so such as a landlord, the EPA recommends an N95 respirator, gloves, and goggles. And for mold growth greater than 10 square feet, they recommend that you consult with a professional. So I just wanted to give you a quick overview to wrap things up about the town health officer's response to mold call. So if you get a call complaining of mold, you should go and perform a rental housing health code inspection. And while you're there, you should ask the occupants and the landlord about possible sources of water or moisture. And this is to inform your search. Really, when I go into a building, the best information I get oftentimes is from the occupant, or if it's a commercial building, the facilities manager or head custodian, because they know these buildings inside and out. and they're in them every day, and they know what's normal and they know what's not. So ask them first. Certainly conduct your own investigation, but make sure to check out if they have any suggested places to look. So again, perform a building investigation using your eyes and your nose and your sense of touch. Don't rely first on air sampling. Document mold, water damage, or moisture if you find it. Again, your primary role is to identify environmental conditions, water, or excessive moisture in the residence. And if the tenant has medical concerns, you should certainly direct them to seek medical advice from their healthcare provider, either for health effects or symptoms that they believe are related to exposure to mold. So after this initial inspection, your follow-up, if you find a rental housing health code violation, you should inform the landlord. You should request voluntary compliance from the landlord to, again, and this compliance would mean to stop the water and the moisture intrusion. And again, the mold is not a violation of the rental housing health code. It's an indication of a violation. So all we can really do is recommend that they clean hard building materials and items and remove damaged soft building materials and items. And I would recommend a reinspection within 30 days. So that's all I have for you guys. Unless there's questions, please ask away. And if I don't have the answer, I'll certainly do my best to follow up with you later and provide that answer.
This is Terry in Richford, and I have a question.
Certainly.
I'm finding some landlords painting after they wash and clean the mold, they paint it. Is that necessary?
So, do you mean they're painting like there's painting soft building materials, like hard,
ceiling,
like drywall,
wall,
ceilings?
Drywall.
Okay. I certainly, if they can stop the water and if they can clean that surface, if they want to paint it, that's going to be aesthetic, but nothing more. But again, if a soft building material has mold growth on it, especially something like drywall, that's pretty hard to clean.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions from anyone?
This is Martha from Hartford. Is it a requirement to have a fan, a ventilation in the bathroom?
The Rental Housing Health Code states that a bathroom must be ventilated, and there's two options. One is an operable window, and secondly is a ventilation fan. But again, that ventilation fan needs to be strong enough, so if it's not installed correctly, or if it's just anemic because it's old, that could be a possible shortfall of the system. And oftentimes, again, we see that these fans are not ventilated to the outdoors. They are ducted into the attic. And so the attic basically has hot, warm, moist air pouring into the attic from the bathroom. So it's a perfect place for mold to grow.
Okay.
Yep.
Any other questions out there?
No.
Okay, thank you everyone for coming, and the next scheduled one is in early September. It's in Lillian's memo. Thank you. Goodbye.